From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Cynthia Lennon died of cancer on April 1st. She was 75. In the late 1950s, when she was Cynthia Powell, she was a student at the Liverpool Art College, where she met John Lennon. At the time, Cynthia was engaged to someone else, but she and John fell in love, and in 1962, just before worldwide fame engulfed the Beatles, Cynthia became pregnant and she and John were married. Their relationship lasted 10 years and produced their son, musician Julian Lennon, before John met Yoko Ono. In 2005, Cynthia Lennon wrote a memoir of those 10 years called John. She wrote, "I was at John's side throughout the most exciting, extraordinary, and eventful 10 years of his life. It was a time when he was at his creative best, a time when he was witty, passionate, honest, and open, when he loved his family and loved the Beatles, a time before drugs and fame led him toward the destruction of so much that he had valued." On Thanksgiving Day 2005, I sat in a little apartment in Paris, and I spoke on the phone with Cynthia Lennon from her home in Spain.
You know, the Beatles are so ubiquitous, and for people like me, hearing a Beatles song is, you know, it's a joyous thing and takes us back to happy times. But what's it like for you when you're in the market or an elevator or wherever and a Beatles song comes on?
Well, I know no different. You know, it's been happening forever since I met John, more or less. I love the music like you do and like millions of other people do, and that's all that matters to me. You know, the music will go on forever.
Are there any particular songs that are special to you?
Well, yes, there are, and yes, of course there are. I mean, most of them are very special to me because I was there when they wrote them, when they recorded them, and when we heard them on the radio and in supermarkets and everything else. I mean, that is part of my life. It's my essence, you know, of being part of that situation. So there's nothing really, well, in my life is beautiful because it expresses so many things for so many people. And there are a lot of other songs, obviously, that relate to certain times in our lives together. And yes, it's all very reminiscent of the experience that I had.
Well, are there some you just can't bear to hear? They just...
No. No, there were two, actually. And I think there was Love Me Do, which I didn't think was the best of what they had to offer in the beginning. But it made it. So my choice was not very good. But there was also George's first sitar single, which I didn't quite like either. But then he progressed from that.
Yeah. I remember, too, when that we first started hearing the sitar, I thought that was weird.
Well, it was a bit sort of miserable, you know? I mean, everything else was up market and upbeat and everything else, but that sort of brought you down, and it was very insightful and very thoughtful for George, but it wasn't for me.
Yeah. Well, your book is wonderful, and thank you for writing it.
Well, thank you.
It's somewhat shocking in the revelation of John as a less than perfect husband and father. You know, was it difficult for you to tell that story knowing how people revere John Lennon?
Well, you know, we all have to sort of come to terms with who we are and what we are and what makes us who we are. And having lived with John for 10 years, more or less, he's not a saint, and he wasn't a sinner, but he was human. You know, when somebody is being revered, I didn't write the book to knock him in any way. I just wrote the book for all the people that really loved him and care about him, just specifically to say to them, well, this was my experience, you know, and I was part of it, and I think I was entitled to write what I wrote.
Well, absolutely. It's your story, and it's very well written. How did you learn to write? Did you keep a journal in those years?
No, I love writing. I'm you know, basically I'm an artist. Well, I started out as an artist, and I became a support act, you know, to the Beatles.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that will never leave me. So I love writing and I love art, and I wrote the book longhand because I'm not a computer buff.
No.
In any way. I mean, I'm beyond that. I'm too old for all that stuff. You know, they keep getting viruses. You know? I understand viruses, but not computer viruses.
Well, your pencil can't get one of those.
What?
They say your pencil can't get a virus.
Absolutely. Fax machines are wonderful. So, I wrote the book longhand, and I faxed it to the publishers, and they edited, and, you know, came back to me and said, well, can't you say a little bit more about that, or that, or that?
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting process.
How was it different from writing, John, you know, different from writing your previous book, A Twist of Lennon?
Oh, totally, absolutely. I mean, it's called The Space That's in Between. And so much time has gone by, so many experiences have been experienced by me. And I think, in fact, I was going to call it, Will You Still Need Me, Will You Still Read Me When I'm 64? Only I was 65, so I have to be honest, because everybody knows my age. there are so many things that happen to you when you're busy making other plans, right?
That's right.
That's what happened. I wrote Twist of Lennon, 78,
mm-hmm.
and long time since then. A lot of things have happened. A lot of water has come under the bridge, and I thought it was important to write it specifically to explain and express for myself and Julian and for John's family.
Now, have you read any of the other 24,000 Beatle biographies that have been written? Did any of them get it right?
There's not enough time in the day, you know.
Yeah.
Life is very precious. So if I spent my life reading, you know, all the millions of books that have been written about John by people who have never lived with him, probably had 5 minutes with him, or they want to do, you know, the date of this. And I mean, I had a lovely experience with a guy. He asked me when I got married, and I gave him the wrong date. And he told me, how could you possibly not remember the day you were married? You see, that's when you're involved, when you're part of it, you don't even think about the dates and the days.
Right. Well, that doesn't diminish the experience of it.
Well, you know, if you're on the outside looking in, it's a different matter. When you're inside, not having the chance to look out, that's another story.
So then, you're saying no, you haven't read any of them.
I've read a few.
Yeah.
I've read Albert Goldman's.
Oh, my gosh.
Only because Maureen, Ringo's first wife,
yes,
gave it to me, and I read it was about Elvis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is so diabolical. And then he brought the one about John, and I thought, I don't believe that this man can get away with it.
Well, that was a bad one to read, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't. I mean, you know, there's negative and positive in our world, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there's somewhere in between. There's a balance somewhere, which we're all trying to find. And fine, we don't want goody-goody two-shoes, but we don't want...
Well, I suppose you could take anybody's life. I think you could take anybody's life and make it look horrible if you just...
Well, of course,
yeah.
Including yours, you know.
Not mine,
anybody's.
No. Not mine, I've never done anything wrong.
No.
I'm a very good
boy. No, I haven't either.
No, not us. We're chatting with Cynthia Lennon, by the way, whose new book is a marvelous book, and it's called John, and it's a very intimate memoir of her married life with him and afterwards. Your book holds John's drug use responsible for the rift in your relationship, or at least partially, especially LSD, and your first LSD experience.
Yes, but it's not necessarily just the drugs. It was a situation that grew from, you know, fame, fortune, realization. John went through a period, and in fact they all did, you know, when they had no private life, they had no space, and John's relief from that pressure was when he experienced, you know, drugs or LSD for the first time. So I'm not blaming everything on our breakdown of our marriage on drugs. It was a progressive thing that happened over a period of years. And there are not many people who can survive that kind of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it seems like every Beatle book in the last 25 years lionizes John to a certain extent and belittles Paul, who's, you know, Paul McCartney. And your book, has Paul really kind of standing up to John's edict that no one communicate with you? And in general, it's very flattering to Paul.
Yeah, but why should people knock Paul? I mean, Paul is such a productive human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's never stopped. You know, a hell of a lot of us would be very proud to be in his position at this time of his life. You know, he's produced music. He never stops producing it. He's a one-man show now, but he wasn't a one-man show then. You know, he was part of a team. It wasn't him that chose to break up the Beatles.
Yeah. Do you communicate with Paul at all? I mean, when was
most... No. I've had a few conversations.
Yeah.
No, not really. I mean, what we have as part of our history is what we remember. And I have fond memories of Paul. So I would never knock him. And he was the one that, you know, wrote Hey Jude or Hey Jules.
Right.
He was the only person that came to me when I needed somebody to sort of make me feel better. And that's how I remember. I mean, whatever anybody else feels or thinks, that's their problem, not mine.
You mentioned Maureen Cox a minute ago, and in your book, The Beatle Wives, Maureen and Patty Boyd and yourself, you sort of emerge as this group of friends who share this unique life experience. It was almost like the astronauts' wives, it seemed.
The what?
No, the wives of the astronauts here.
Oh, right. Well, yes, I can understand that. Absolutely, because we were in a cocoon.
Yeah.
You know, and whoever is connected with anyone that's on a mission, whatever kind of mission they're on, you know, you have a support act, and the girls or the women with the boys, the Beatles or the astronauts or whatever, you know, are the support act.
Right. Well, and then you were sort of torn away from them. Did you, in later years, did you reconnect with Patty or Maureen or Jane Asher?
Well, Maureen was always my good friend. Everybody went off in their own direction after the divorce of John and I. I think I was the first to go, and then the snowball went down the hill.
Right. Well, John always led the way, eh?
Well, yes. Well, he could always hold a crowd in his hand, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, no, then, you don't know where they... I mean, I know Maureen has passed away, but...
Yeah, no. I mean, there's so many sacrifices. It's a funny way of putting it, but... You know, there's so many people that I've loved and lost over that period. And because of the intensity of the whole thing, I think that's what happens. Or maybe it's under a microscope and people notice it more. I don't know. But I lost an awful lot of lovely people, very young, you know, during that period.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of casualties from that era.
That's the word.
Yes.
Casualties.
Now, in your book and in the current Newsweek, I see, you said some things about Yoko Ono that obviously, you know, one wouldn't expect your book to be very flattering to Yoko. You say that you feel she still attempts to separate Julian from his father's legacy, from John Lennon. What do you
think? Well, I think, you know, actions speak louder than words, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, yes, and again, the pen is mightier than the sword. But when it comes to the reality of everything, yes. I mean, it's a situation that is almost, you know, cut down the center. You know, that was our lives. and nothing existed before Yoko and John. And that's not the truth.
And that's one of the motivations for writing your book?
Absolutely. I've done so much in my life to support my son and to support the memory that he had a father called John Lennon. You know, I've worked very hard on that, and it's hard to explain, but, you know, we haven't disappeared. We haven't been airbrushed out. We still exist, and we still feel, and we're still part and parcel of the whole Lennon-Beatle legend. So don't even think about dismissing, you know, people who exist.
Well, what do you think is up with Yoko? I mean, do you think she's an evil person, or what?
No, do you?
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to say, but...
No, you asked the question.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think so. Although, in your book, and I think also in the new book about the Beatles that Bob Spitz wrote, I see her in a different way than I saw her as a fan.
Listen, all I can say about anybody in this world that is prominent or is part and parcel of the media or whatever is you make up your own mind, you know? And you get on with your own life the best way you can. And it doesn't matter whether she's good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't matter. What you have to do in life is just to keep your head above water and, you know, love the people you love.
Yeah, well, that's good. All you need is love, is what you're saying.
Thank you. Yes.
You know, a few years ago, our show is in Santa Cruz, California. And a few years ago, Julian was here in Santa Cruz. He played a fantastic show, a sold-out show, a marvelous concert at a club here. And so we all want to know how Julian's doing, and is he going to come back to music and come back and see us again soon?
As we speak, he's working in the studio with his guitarist. And yes, next year we should, fingers crossed, have an album out.
Well, the last album was a fabulous one.
What?
It was the best album of his career. Yes.
It was superb.
Really great.
I know. then I would say that, wouldn't I?
Well, anyone who heard it would.
Well, it was exquisite, and I don't think it went as far as it should have done, but at least, you know, he's back in the studio, and he's happy, he's writing music, and it's en route.
Tell us a little bit about his life. Does he have a family or other? I mean,
no, he has a fiance of 8 years, and her name's Lucy in the Sky with Diamond.
Isn't that funny?
Not LSD.
No.
But yes, he's a very good person, and he's very positive. Obviously, he has to be a little bit sort of hurt about what happened in his life.
Yeah.
And hopefully that my writing this book has released a few of those heavy bags that he's been carrying.
Well, his foreword to your book is quite nice also.
I know. I didn't ask him to do that.
Well,
and I was in tears when I read it, actually.
It's very beautiful. Well, it's one thing to, you know, when you get older, to sort things out with your father.
Yeah, well, that's not possible, is it?
Right.
But at least he can sort things out with himself, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's wonderful. We're talking to Cynthia Lennon, whose new book, John, is a fantastic memoir. And in addition to the bad times that you talk about in your book is filled with wonderful stories of the boy you fell in love with in Liverpool. And I wonder if you could maybe relate some of the happiest times to share with us today.
Oh, for goodness sake. Well, I've been so privileged. I really have. I mean, I know at the end of the book I said, if I'd known what was ahead of me, I would have turned around and walked away. But I am so grateful. I had the most amazing experience in my life. I have the most wonderful son. You know, you don't need an apprenticeship, do you? I mean, my life was an apprenticeship to be who I am now, and I was lucky enough to be part of it. And John and I, during our pre-Beatle period, were very, very much in love and very, very, not even looking towards the future, thank God. I mean, all I can say is that, you know, we should never look beyond the moment that we have.
Yeah. I went to Liverpool a couple of years ago.
You lucky. Did you enjoy?
I did, you know, I went to saw your college, you know, the
little cavern.
Yes, well, the new cavern, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
But I did go to the Jacaranda Club and went to Mendip's, and where you lived for a time.
Right.
And it was fun to walk in those footsteps. Now, speaking of Mendip's, your book tells us a very interesting, I think you're the first person ever to write about Mimi in a kind of an unflattering mother-in-law kind of way.
Well, there's no way I could flatter her, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No,
I apologize.
Don't apologize. It's marvelous. Very well written and very, you know, very, very real. But again, it had never been told before. No one has ever said anything bad about her before.
Well, that's the whole point of writing something, that, you know, we all believe in myths. And we're all shocked by reality, but, you know, reality is what it's all about. And Mimi was how Mimi was to me. Mimi was how Mimi was to John. And that's all I can tell is the truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
About a situation that I lived through, he lived through, and myths sometimes have to be dispelled.
Well, I agree, and I think your book does a marvelous job of doing that. And it was very brave of you to write it, and thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for spending some time talking to us today. It's really been a pleasure to speak with you.
It's lovely. It's pity we can't sit, you know, opposite each other.
Well, I wish we could.
Maybe there will be a time.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I've loved them all. But of all these friends and lovers, there is no one compares with you. And these memories lose their meaning when I think of love as something new. Though I know I'll never lose affection for people and things that went before, I know I'll often stop and think about them. In my life, I love you more.
Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. Tonight's Cynthia Lennon interview was produced by Breanne Beal. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.